We have a half an hour to spend on the text that we're working. For those of you who were not with us in the last week or two, we're working in Deuteronomy chapter 19, or otherwise known as 5th Moses, chapter 19, dealing with verses 1 to 13. Before we start, if you're feeling sorry for yourself, this is what a niece of ours posted this week. This was the forecast for them. And of course, our home is Saskatoon, right in the middle of this, and minus 64 Celsius calculates to minus 83 Fahrenheit. That's winter. I thought when we got out of Deuteronomy 18, remember our comments? We would be done? Somebody didn't get the message. Anyhow, we are still in Deuteronomy chapter 19, and winter is still here. My students know that if I am tired of winter, then we've had a winter. And it's okay if spring comes by now. Again, a reminder of the outline of our passage. You've got the provision of asylum for innocent manslaughter, the nature of the provision, 1 to 3, the need for the provision. We're finishing up. In verse 4, we have the announcement of the provision, verses 5 to 7. The primary case involving the asylum town, and we dealt last week with verse 5, which gives us the unfortunate incident. Suppose a man goes into the forest with his friend to cut wood, and his hand swings an axe to cut down the tree, and the iron head slips off the axe, off the handle, and strikes his friend so that he dies. He may flee to one of these cities and live. That's the problem. What's the solution? We have this then. That's the case. The problem is actually in verse 6. Otherwise, the avenger of blood might pursue the manslayer in the heat of his anger. I think we would translate that in hot passion. And overtake him because the way is long, and take his life, though he was not deserving death, since he had not hated him previously. Well, of course, the key here is that expression, his heart is hot. And of course, this is a natural response. If somebody takes the life of somebody in your family, our hearts are hot. We are inflamed with passion, anger, whatever other emotion we have. What happens then is the guy pursues the killer, overtakes the killer, notice, because the way is long. And of course, that highlights the importance that everybody know the routes to the asylum towns. We talked about this, as in the routes you're supposed to take. For instance, if this place started burning, we should have maps or plans here somewhere, what to do in case of fire. Be sure you know the routes. But if you're at the edge of the territory served by an asylum town, you've got a long ways to go, which also means the avenger of blood has a lot of time to catch up with you. Well, this is the problem. And he kills the killer. Then you must, he overtakes the killer. He's not allowed to overtake the killer. You're supposed to find refuge in him in the town before he catches you. But of course, why is the killer to be protected? And the end of this, the way is long, he takes his life, though he has not deserving death, since he had not hated him previously. This is important. Motive. There's no history of an estranged relationship. And of course, the word for hated here does not mean he's not been angry or whatever, it felt like beating him up. This is the opposite of love. And if love is to be covenantally committed to somebody so that you always operate in that person's interests, hate is a rejection of that, disposition. This, you have no history of not looking out for the well-being of this person. Then you are obviously innocent. So you are to provide these asylum towns to protect the killer. He has not demonstrated hatred toward the person, the victim in the past. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall set aside three towns. And now we're going to skip right over to verse 10, which give us the rationale. We'll come back to verses 8 and 9 in a moment. But verse 10, why this policy? So innocent blood will not be shed in the midst of your land, which the Lord your God gives you as an inheritance or as a grant, and blood guiltiness be on you. Well, a couple of things here. To prevent shedding of innocent blood. Now, the innocent blood in this case is not the blood. We're not talking about the blood of the person who was struck by the axe head. That is innocent as well. But in this case, the innocent blood is the blood of the person, the unfortunate person, responsible for the death of the other. Obviously, the problem here is not the blood, because this blood is innocent. We are not cleansing a place from the contamination of blood. What are we cleansing it from? To maintain the purity of the land. The issue here is not the blood, but the crime. Blood shed. The word dam in this case is a shorthand for the crime of taking another person's life. That's the blood that needs, or that is the issue that needs to be resolved. So this is all in protection of innocent life. Life is sacred, and if life is taken accidentally, don't treat it as a homicide, intentional murder. Respect the life of the person responsible. In accidental homicides, there are always two victims. There is the one who perpetrated the crime, not crime, who's responsible for the act, and the person who is a victim. That's the primary case. The asylum towns are there to protect life. Now let's jump ahead to the secondary case. I mentioned last week that in chapters 19 through 25, when Moses deals with specific issues of righteousness, he often spends the center of gravity on a primary case. And then after presenting the primary case, he'll present a secondary case. On the other hand, and in verses 11 to 13, we have this. Verses 11. But if there is a man who hates his neighbor and lies in wait for him and rises up against him and strikes him so that he dies and he flees to one of these cities, then the elders of his city shall send him and take him from there, deliver him into the hand of the avenger of blood that he may die. You shall not pity him, but you shall purge the blood of the innocent from Israel that it may go well with you. Well, we have three parts to this one. The nature of the action, the prescribed response, and then the rationale. Now, again, let's put the primary case and the secondary case side by side. The primary case, suppose a man goes into the forest with his neighbor to cut wood. He swings an axe to fell a tree. The head flies off, finds his neighbor and kills him. That man may flee to one of his cities and save his life. That's what we've been talking about. Now you have the secondary case. But on the other hand, suppose someone is hostile toward a neighbor, deliberately ambushes and murders him, and then flees to one of the cities of refuge. Again, Moses is taking off on the earlier text that's ringing in his ears from Exodus 21. Because in that one, too, you have the primary case and the secondary case. If a man strikes a person so that he dies, shall surely be put to death. But if he didn't lie in wait for him, but God causes it to happen into his hand, then I will appoint for you a place that he may fight. But if a man willfully plots to kill his neighbor, you shall take him from my altar. There's the notion of asylum. Only this time it's in the sanctuary. We'll come back to this. Take him from my altar that he may die. It is the same kind. Well, again, summarizing the criminal's action, and now we can talk about the criminal. Because this was willful. He lies in wait for his neighbor, he jumps up against him, he delivers a fatal blow, he flees to one of the asylum towns. Now what are you supposed to do with this guy? He's also responsible for somebody's death, but he's claiming protection. Verses 12 to 13a. Assuming the person is guilty, and no doubt, the moment he shows up and knocks on the gate of the town and says, let me in, they're after me, they would probably go through some sort of procedure. But the prescribed action is probably the elders from the man's hometown will be going after him. Then they shall hand him over to the avenger of blood, and he must execute him. Apparently, the elders of the asylum town would have established that we have sufficient cause to deliver this man over to the avenger of blood, and this is what happens. The elders from the man's hometown go after him, they hand him over to the avenger, and he must execute him. Of course, you remember that justice is everybody's business. Justice is not in the hands of police. The Bible knows nothing, or the First Testament, the Old Testament, knows nothing of police. There are no police in the Old Testament. We are all one another's keepers. It's everybody's business that justice prevails. And in this case, the clan is responsible for the administration of justice within. On the other hand, the clan has to know the difference between guilt and innocence. And you can't just look at that, the body of the person, the victim, in the morgue. You've got to try to establish whether there is guilt or innocence. Well, this is the secondary, the prescribed action, the prescribed disposition. Did you notice this in verse 13? You shall not pity him. Oh, well, what if he's an important person in the community? What if he's a rich man? On the other hand, what if he's a poor man? Of course, Leviticus 19 is very clear. You shall never defer to the rich and the powerful, nor shall you be swept away with emotion for the weak and the poor. Justice must prevail. This no pity formula, literally it means, your eye shall not tear. There is no place for sentimentality in administration of justice in this case. This is actually a common formula in the prophets. Ezekiel, several times, the Lord says, though they cry in my ears, my eye will not pity and I will not spare. In Deuteronomy, we have this show them no mercy text several times, 7:16. You shall consume all the peoples that the Lord your God will give you. Your eye shall not pity them, nor shall you serve their gods, for they would be a snare to you when you're contemplating the conquest, eliminating the Canaanites, a troubling ethical issue, I know. But don't let sentimentality get in the road of that which the Lord is asking. 13:8. This is in the case of somebody who leads you into idolatry. You shall not yield to him, that is, to one who tries to get you to go after the gods, or listen to him, or nor shall your eye pity, nor shall you spare him, nor shall you conceal him. There is no place for sentimentality. 19:13, here in the case of murder. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall purge the guilt of the innocent from blood from Israel, so that it may be well with you. 19:21. This is at the end of our chapter. Your eye shall not pity, it shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. This is in the case of one who falsely accuses another. In this case, it's not a matter of capital punishment necessarily, but we'll come back to this in probably 2 weeks, which means three or four. We'll come back to this and we'll talk about this talion formula here. 25. When men fight with one another and the wife of one draws near to rescue her husband from the hand of him who is beating him and puts out her hand and seizes his genitals, then you shall cut off her hand. Your eye shall not pity. What in the world is that? We don't have time today to solve the problem. The issue is, your eye shall not pity. It's remarkable how often this formula surfaces. And it is true of God, and it is true of his people. The interest of justice must, the principles of justice must serve. And sentimental, subjective issues may never trump the pursuit of justice, an important principle. The rationale for this response then. But you shall purge the guilt. Again, we have this. Earlier it was, so the innocent blood will not be shed in the midst of the land which the Lord gives you. Verse 10. Now you shall purge the guilt of innocent blood from Israel so it may be well with you. Reminder, it's not the blood that defiles the land. This is innocent blood. So we're not just washing the... Remember Cain and Abel? The blood of your brother is crying from the ground. The issue is not actually the blood. It is the crime that's screaming. It is the evil of blood guilt. Dumb is the word here. Notice the word evil keeps surfacing. In the other purge formulas, thus you shall purge the evil out. Actually, we have, I thought I had a whole bunch of purgation formulas up on here. You shall purge the evil. Here it is. You shall purge the blood guilt from the land. It's in the interests of keeping the community. Notice above, thus, so innocent blood will not be shed in the midst of the land. Now it is, you shall not pity, but you shall purge the blood of the innocent from Israel, that it may go well with you. So there's contamination here by the crime at two levels. The people themselves are contaminated by the crime, and the land where they live is contaminated. All of this is in the interests of holiness. Purity. 26:19. See, I have set you high above the nations for praise and for fame and for glory. Whose praise, whose fame, and whose glory? Not Israel's, but the Lord's. Again, back to chapter 4. When the nations see you, they will say, wow, congratulations. What a nation is there? What great nation is there that has a God so near to it as the Lord our God whenever we call upon him, and has a law as righteous as this whole Torah that I am setting before you? In the administration of justice, Israel is to become the model for the world, that the world may look on them with envy and say, I wish I had that. That's what we need. This is the principle of righteousness ruling in the land. Well, before we go to the expansion of the provision, let's time for a question. Yes, sir. Two questions. What if the avenger of blood overtakes the murderer or the innocent one, the manslaughterer, and is the avenger of blood allowed to have mercy? Well, in the case of the manslaughter, he must have mercy. In the case of murder, he may not have mercy. That would be the simple answer. If the avenger of blood overtakes the one who's actually guilty of murder, he is fully within the clan rights and the community rights to do it before the guy gets to the asylum town. But that seems to be the case here. The distinctions here are extremely important. The person guilty of manslaughter, accidental manslaughter, and the person guilty of intentional murder, two different cases. If the avenger of blood is after the first guy, the manslaughter, he must have mercy. He must treat him as a victim. He has already... He's lost a friend. They went out to the forest together. And so mercy must prevail in that case. In fact, mercy equals justice. There's not a contrast here. The avenger of blood on the manslaughterer. If he kills the manslaughterer, then the blood is on his hands. And now we've got a crime added to the accident, and then we have to deal with that one. Yeah, that's bad. We're in a race, but the avenger of blood has to know the principle as well. You're assuming that if this happens to your relative, the automatic response is hot anger, and I'm going to be after him. Now, the avenger of blood, passion overrules rationality. This is why this is written to the community. So that if this ever happens to you, to somebody in your family, and you are the one responsible for the avenging, you have to know before you go in. Cool it. Chill. Stifle the hot anger. It's natural to be frustrated and, I suppose, internally angry. Why did this happen? And even angry with God. In the Exodus, or in the other case we had, and God does it. It's easy to think in those terms. But the point here is that don't add crime to crime. In the case of murder, you have added crime to crime if you let him go. I'm sure that's the case. The asylum town is there to give asylum to the manslaughterer, but it's also there to give asylum to the guy who's so hot with anger. It gives him space to cool. You know, so even from a psychological perspective, this turns out to be quite an admirable system. And remarkably enlightened. But that shouldn't surprise us. God is light, and in him is no darkness at all.
So really what we're doing is saying, there's a city with courts on. The courts are in the city.
Yes.
So you get in trouble, you've got to get the money.
Yes. But there are courts in every town. I mean, for all kinds of issues. We're dealing here with capital cases. And in capital cases, this is what you do. What's the problem?
Well, the problem, I've just been totally turned around. I thought that the Avenger of Blood,
yeah.
And I don't know why I thought this, I'm confused, but I'm glad I'm being unconfused. I thought the Avenger of Blood got the chance to track this guy down and kill him before he got to the town, even if he was hit, even if he was mad.
Yes. Yep.
That was bad.
Exactly. That's.
I don't see that here. I didn't get that from. I got the impression that we have these towns as a great provision, so this guy, if he can run fast enough, can get there first.
Well, we do that, but you still have the human issue in this one, that the Avenger of Blood in this case is in the wrong. If he's pursuing a person responsible for the death of and if he gives vent, commits physical violence to vent his anger, he is now in the wrong. Yeah, that's. No, I think it is innocent until proven guilty, and this is, again, remember, this is not written for lawyers. So that when the case comes to court, you've got precedents, you've got law. This is written for the community. So that if this ever, this is a prophylactic, it's to prevent. If this ever happens to you, you should know in advance what the right thing to do is. Because if you don't know what the right thing is in advance, when the thing hits you, you will act impulsively. This is for everybody. We can finish up the expansion of the provision. We'll come back next week and talk about the so what's for us. We'll start out with that next week. But let's look at the expansion of the provision in verses 8 and 9. I said we would do this. If the Lord your God enlarges your territory, just as he sworn to your fathers and gives you all the land which he promised to your fathers, if you carefully observe all this command that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, then you shall add 3 more cities for yourself besides these 3. Well, this is interesting. The presupposed human, or the presupposed divine action, verse 8, if the Lord keeps his promise and gives you land, he enlarges your territory. And we don't know exactly now what he's talking about, because you have 2 definitions of the promised land. Genesis 15, the promised land is from the river of Egypt to the great river Euphrates. David's kingdom was that big, but that was never the land of Israel. The land of Israel is this smaller section. We've seen this before, from Mount Hermon in the north to the deserts of the Negev. But if the Lord gives you all, when the Lord gives you all the land, and notice, I'm in the wrong page. If you are obedient to this command and you love the Lord your God by walking in his ways. Again, remember our conversation about love. Love is not just something I feel on February 14th or whatever. I mean, it's not pink foam and roses. Love is action. And you demonstrate love for God by keeping his commands, walking in his ways. These are the keys to fulfilling the vision and the mission God has for you. Then you shall add 3 more cities for yourself besides these 3. Well, actually, we have covenant commitment demonstrated in action and walking in the ways of the Lord. Actually, They've already assigned those earlier in Deuteronomy chapter 3 at the end. When they conquered the land, we lost the map here. When they conquered the land on this side, Sion and Og, east of the Jordan, 2.5 tribes stayed there. And the text says then already they set aside 3 asylum towns. So, obviously that is a deposit looking forward to the policy. But in any case, let's go to this one. Joshua 20, verse 7-8, where they actually fulfill this. The following cities were designated cities of refuge: Kadesh in Galilee, in the hill country of Naphtali; Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim; Kiriath Arba, Hebron, in the hill country of Judah. On the east side of the Jordan River, across the Jericho, the following cities were designated: Bezer, in the wilderness of the plain of the tribe of Reuben; Ramoth in Gilead, and the territory of the tribe of Gad; and Golan in Bashan, the land of the tribe of Manasseh. When the Lord fulfills His word, and God always does. But that does not mean that the benefits and blessings of covenant relationship are unconditional. They are always conditional. This is true in the Old Testament. It's true in the New Testament. In the New Testament, Jesus says, "I am the vine. You are the branches. Every branch in me that bears fruit, He prunes that it may flourish even more. But every branch in me that does not bear fruit, what does He do? He cuts it off, throws it into the fire." This is Jesus' equivalent to Deuteronomy 28. The blessing is there for those who are faithful to God. For those who are not, the alternative.